Park Place Meeting, Wednesday morning, 16th June 1976. You may recall, it was said yesterday morning that self-discipline is a learning of the ways of the self and the discovery of the meaning of this word self. The first part, learning the ways of the self, straightforwardly refers to ourselves as we are. And the discovery of the meaning of the self, the word self and what it stands for, represents that towards which mankind is growing. What individual men and women could be when they have realized fruition, maturity. So the special meaning of the self in that sense for us as individuals is embodied in the God conceptions of the great teachers, not merely theologians or people who make conjectures of an ought to be. Either in the God conceptions as presented by the great teachers, or in their expositions of the perfected Holy One. What is the perfected Holy One like? For never forget that for those who devoted their lives, bent all their efforts towards this supreme realization of what it means to be a full-fledged human being, for them the word God signified the perfected man. So much so that Eckhart, for instance, says quite openly, "For man verily is God, and God verily is man." You can substitute any other word for the word God, a word which signifies him who has realized truth, to use the words applied to the Buddha, for instance, who has become Dhamma, become Brahma. Note carefully that both words are used always in this connection. Become Dhamma, become the truth, that is, or whatsoever the teaching represents in ultimate terms, and it is always coupled with become Brahma, which later Buddhism translated as the best. But in the Buddha's day, Brahma meant precisely the Brahmanical Brahma, God the Creator, God the Father God. And do remember that this Father God idea has always been associated in the esoteric teachings, particularly from Egypt right down into India, with the word mind. as the supreme reality. But mind, not as we ordinarily conceive of mind, but mind in the sense of that creative power which is absolute, indefinable, immeasurable, which is transcendent and yet not other than what we are. We must really appreciate these points because they lie right at the foundation of all the religious teachings regarding the way, regarding the disciplines and the fulfillment of man. This vision of man, what man is in his fulfillment, is a sure guide to self-discipline for us who are still growing towards that maturity. If we are unable to set our sights on transcendence, on the truth, on that towards which we are growing, then in which direction shall we bend our efforts? We shall go in all likelihood astray rather than be in line with the trend of life itself. What is the Zarathustrian presentation? First, what is Zarathustra's authority? Now, I'm using that word very carefully. What is Zarathustra's authority for what he teaches? Here are his own words from the Gathas, which constitute about the only remnant left to us of what he himself wrote, what he himself produced. Other books of his were destroyed by invaders who came into Iran, and also when the library at Alexandria was destroyed. He says, "Then did I realize thee," thee referring to Ahura Mazda, which is the Avastan term for God. Ahura Mazda, Lord of life and wisdom. Note very carefully, that's the meaning of the term there. Lord of life and wisdom. "Then did I realize thee as the most bountiful one, O Mazda Ahura." Sometimes the two parts are interchanged in their order. "When the good mind encircled me completely, he declared to me that silent meditation is the best for attaining spiritual enlightenment." It's very significant how Zarathustra puts it. When the good mind encircled me completely, this good mind, as it is called, Vahu Mano, means the mind which has become utterly purified of all defilement. When, as in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, all evil-mindedness is completely burnt out, then you are the person, the Purusha, the supreme person. When all evil-mindedness is burnt out, Now this term burnt out is a key to understanding why fire has been one of the supreme symbols as well as the sun for the ultimate realization. The creative fire. When the good mind encircled me completely, he, that refers to himself in that state of communion, when he is the utterly purified one in perfect samadhi, he declared to me that silent meditation is the best for attaining spiritual enlightenment. Then, further on, he goes on to say, "Now in truth have I beheld him clearly in my mind's eye." People say, "I have seen God, spoken to God," and so on. But Zarathustra puts it absolutely unequivocally, "Beheld him clearly in my mind's eye, knowing through Asha." Asha is righteousness. It also stands for purity, for the truth in the absolute sense. "Knowing through Asha of the good spirit in word and deed, I can now see Mazda Ahura himself." That indicates something of the authority underlying his teaching, his personal realization. He himself had become the Holy One, the greatest of the Magga Brotherhood. You've heard of the term the Magi, or however you pronounce it in English. It was the Magga Brotherhood which flourished in Iran in Zarathustra's day. And they were, of course, in conflict with those whom they called the followers of the lie, the untruth. And Zarathustra became the supreme one of his time. Again, Zarathustra declares, "Him will I seek to magnify, Ahura Mazda, will I seek to magnify in our worshipping, who in his unbending might is known as Mazda Ahura, for through his divine law and his good mind and under his sovereign power, he has assigned to man perfection and immortality." Note carefully what he says. This is the message he brings. Assigned to man perfection and immortality. How is this presented in detail in some of the other scriptural writings of Zarathustrianism? In one of the very important prayers, groups of prayers known as the Yasts, Y-A-S-H-T-S. It is put in the form of a divine dialogue. And Zarathustra asks, what is the most potent means for delivering oneself from evil? And Ahura Mazda answers, our names are the most powerful means for delivery from evil, from the ill state. And then there is a list of these names. The first one is simply I who am. This is a self-affirmation. Consider quietly, this is realized in the state of the Supreme Communion, where the word I has no restricted meaning. The word I, just as in the Upanishadic writings, just as when the Buddha himself uses the word I so emphatically throughout the discourses, Aham, stands for the one and only I, the one and only that is, the Swayambhu, the self-existent, not dependent upon anything, but the self-existing, the absolute reality. I who am. And you find this also coming out in Exodus when Yahweh Elohim says to Moses, when the Israelites ask you, who hath sent you? Say unto them, Ehiye, Asher, Ehiye. Ehiye is the word which means I. I am Asher that Ehiye I am. The one and only I am. Therefore you see, this idea of the isolated self has been completely transcended. In mind and consciousness, the separate individual is the embodiment of the one and only total being. I know, for instance, that problems arise with the student of Buddhism. They say that the signs of being are impermanence, anicca, anatta, no self, as it is unfortunately translated, should be translated, no ultimate reality in the separate manifested self. Atta is ultimate reality, actually. It is the absolute, not the relative. That's what it means. You can say that the Atta has no sanskaras at all. See, none of the different skandhas apply to the Atta. These are all the changing expressions of the one ultimate reality. So you find this affirmation of ultimate reality in some form or other through all the great religions of the world. So here comes the affirmation by Zarathustra in the state of supreme communion, that I who am, aham me, is the avastan. It's the avastan form of the Sanskrit asmi, I am. The next name that he gives is the shepherd, sometimes also translated as the gatherer. He who takes everything in into himself. All pervading. You see, try and listen to this very meditatively, with the mind absolutely open, no blockages, to the full significance of words in the language. All-pervading, supreme holiness, the whole good creation of the seed of holiness, of the seed of holiness. And that aspect of creation which goes wrong, which becomes ill, is the thing which has to be healed and made whole again. Our specific task as individuals whose vision hasn't opened to the supreme towards which we are all moving. Knowledge and the possessor of knowledge, wisdom and the master of wisdom, prosperity and the bestower of prosperity. Compare this with, and the Lord God said, be fruitful and multiply. Multiply not in quantitative terms, not in terms of measurement, because they all belong to time and space, to that which is relative, to that which is mortal. But multiply means grow in intensity, so that the light of reality and truth becomes brighter and brighter within our own limited being, as the process of the purification of the mind and the maturing of the mind takes place. These seem to me to be some of the deep meanings enshrined in terms like this. Prosperity, therefore. How different is this concept of prosperity from what mortals in the world, what worldlings call prosperity? There is no acquisitiveness here. There is no gaining or losing here or anything like that. This mysterious, marvelous thing, an immeasurable totality in its vastness, an immeasurable totality embodied in the single point, the infinity of the large, the infinity of the small, all in one. And prosperity lies in the infinitudeness of the large, of the small. Nothing to possess, nothing to hold, nothing to gain, nothing to lose, but just to be oneself, that purified point of life, light, through which the eternal giver, whatever that eternal giver is, may pour forth beneficence and benediction upon everything all around. Almighty. But what is the meaning of being almighty? Indestructible, surely. And how is anything indestructible? If it is something which can never be taken to bits, never be taken apart, and if it can never be taken apart, it also means that it is infinitely elastic, infinitely resilient. There is no holding on to a particular manifestation of self, which in us manifests fundamentally as selfness. If there is no holding on to an imaginary separate self, then you are the indestructible, immortal one, the invincible one, the undying one, the stainless, the sorrowless. This is the kind of realization in mind and consciousness which emerges, and it remains part and parcel of one's whole being. That which is a potentiality has become an actuality. Lord of life is another name. Justicia, the utterly just one. Karma, perfectly fulfilled in one meaning of the word karma. That meaning being simply this, that whatsoever is taking place in the limited sphere, on the limited scale, is the inevitable and ineluctable resultant of all the forces at play. This is justice. We may not like it sometimes. Why should John Brown, who is such a saint and so forth, walking along the mountainside, suddenly slip and be smashed at the bottom of the precipice? What had he done to deserve it, we say? It's not like that at all. All the forces at play just operate. It's perfectly true. John Brown is a saint. But it happened that he slipped. It happened that there was a precipice and the force of gravity, and there was solid rock at the bottom. So, what could happen but that? You see, if we do not have any sense of wanting a thing to be otherwise, because this wise, it is something we don't like, or which annoys us or hurts us and so forth. If we are free of that, then we shall understand the justice of everything that happens, the justness. Not a question of deserving. This is how the universe works. Friend of all. God is the friend of all. God is the absolute good. The absolute good enshrined in us is our friend all the time, always. I, being blind, do not see it when things which I don't like happen to me. But if I understand this and let my mind be quiet, let my wishing mind, my desiring, grasping mind be quiet, I shall know bliss in every single experience, painful or pleasant. Invincible. I've already mentioned that. All-seeing, omniscient. Are not these the terms in which the founders of the great religions have all been described? Healer. He who makes whole. Lawgiver. Lord of creation, Let us tie the two up, lawgiver and Lord of creation. What is this process of creation? The emergence of cosmos out of a primordial chaos. This primordial chaos is not a disorder. It is a state of complete restfulness, a Sabbath, in which everything just vibrates quietly, steadily, unmovingly. But when that unmoving state, but vibrant state, produces a motion of translation, of carrying across time and space and separate finite objects and things come into being. And that which comes into being in this manner is a cosmos. In this cosmos, as a whole and a totality, and in each and every one of its constituent parts, this primordial eternal order is inherent in every single manifestation. And the sustaining and upholding of this eternal order, which is inherent in everything, is the law of that thing. This upholding of the law, this eternal order of things inherent in cosmos, harmonious pattern, the upholding of it is the meaning of the term dharana used in the exposition of yoga after the preliminaries of purification and the postures and the breathing and so forth. You come to pratyahara, the non-attachment and the non-aversion, and then dharana, the upholding of this eternal order. If you are not attached, if you do not have, if you are free of aversion, then you uphold the eternal order of things. And so you have law, divine law, as it is called. This is how Ahura Mazda answers Zarathustra. All these points represent the self. This is the meaning of the self. Ahura Mazda says something else too. O Zarathustra, here in my abode, remember, this is Zarathustra in the Supreme Communion, realizing certain things, which are afterwards put in words by him. Zarathustra says, Ahura Mazda says, O Zarathustra, here in my abode, that is the state of supreme communion, dwelleth the good mind. Good in the sense of the absolutely perfect mind. The primordial creative mind. Supreme holiness. Power. And there are two words which are used in this context in the Avastan language, kshatra and mantra. Mantra refers to the power of the word. The word is the formulator, the giver of form. And the word is also the conveyor the indicator of form. I mean, that is ordinarily so in every language in the world, that it is the indicator of form. But the word, as word of power, is the giver, the maker of form, the producer of form. And kshatra refers to the indescribable aspect of power, which is creative energy in action. So these are some of the qualities which represent the self in its supreme state through human beings. Divine devotion, Aramaiti, presented as the feminine, the daughter of Ahura Mazda. The good mind is Vahumano. Supreme holiness is Asha. Asha Vahishta. Vahishta means supreme. Pa, kshatra, and mantra. Divine devotion, Aramaiti, the daughter of Ahura Mazda. Wholeness, Haurvatat, I mentioned this yesterday, and immortality, Ameritat. So this is a meaning of the self. And self-discipline means, therefore, learning what it is to be thus. The process of growing and growing happily into this state is one of the interesting characteristics of Zarathustrianism, that it is an entirely happy religion. There is an astonishing joyousness, not a kind of a self-assertive, extrovert, superficial, bubbling enthusiasm of the ordinary sort, where a person gets unbalanced. It's not that. But there is a deep-seated joy. The whole of the universe, the whole of our growth, the whole process of undergoing all that we undergo in order to let the mind become purified, to let the individual being come to fruition, all the struggle and the pain involved in it, all that at its heart has joy. And you find the same thing presented in Hinduism, Ananda, the bliss, and the Buddha also said, at the heart of all things, at the heart of all things lies eternal bliss. So, something like this is the meaning of the self. And self-discipline is a case of learning this meaning. You have heard me say several times now, set your sights on transcendence. How does Dionysius the Areopagite, the pseudo-Areopagite, present the self? You know, in that marvelous work of his, The Mystical Theology and the Names of God, Dionysius presents these terms: goodness, being, And there are three degrees of being in this treatise of his: existence, life, intelligence. It's very interesting that he presents those: existence, life, intelligence. Compare that with the Brahmanical Sat, Chit, Ananda: being, consciousness, bliss. The next is life. The next is intelligence, in its triple form of wisdom, reason, and truth. Remember, this Dionysius was not the one who lived in the time of Jesus and shortly afterwards. That was another Dionysius. This is that Syrian monk. They think he was a Syrian monk, flourished about the 4th, 5th century AD. And he presents intelligence in terms of wisdom, reason, and truth. You'll see the influence of the interaction between Greek and Kabbalistic teaching there. Power. The great and the small. The omnipotent, the ancient of days. That, of course, is directly derived from the Kabbalah. The ancient of days. As peace, the Holy of Holies, the King of Kings, Lord of Lords, God of Gods. And you are perhaps familiar with all these phrases, not only from the Bible, but from English literature too. The divine perfection and unity. This is how he presents it in his treatise, The Divine Names and the Mystical Theology. So you see, these two presentations give us some sort of vision of the self in personalistic terms and in terms of qualities for which we already have ordinary meanings. But these ordinary meanings have to become extraordinary meanings, not limited meanings. But each word and its meaning has to become the totality of meanings. All the meanings are embodied in any one meaning. No one word here can stand apart from the other words. It is completely bound up, completely interrelated with all other words. Because remember that where words and language are concerned, no one word by itself has significance unless it is related to other words. And it is this interrelationship which makes for its wholeness and holiness. And when the mind is utterly pure, free of delusion, and the person is not liable to delusion, as the Buddha would have said, then the spoken word becomes a word of power, creative. Hence, we must never discard what has been put forth in every great religion in the world, in every great spiritual teaching. We can utilize it for our own, I shall use the commoner garden word, for our own profit, in order that we may see more deeply, more clearly, and grow towards that truth which is the fruition of true self-discipline.